on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. My name is Luke Guerrero, and I will be your host for the next hour on this beautiful Tuesday, October 21st, 2025. Sounds crazy to say October 21st. November is already around the corner, and before you know it, the year will be up and we'll be heading in to 2026. And so things are really moving quickly here in the fourth quarter of the year. And with regards to markets, and therefore your portfolios, things are moving quickly as well. And it's difficult, it's hard to remain focused each and every day. So we here at InvestTalk think that and hope that we play a small part in making you a better and more informed investor each and every day. Now, in order to do that, we have a mixture of educational items, actionable material, and we bring that to the table each and every day. But the most important part of this show are your finance and investment questions. You help steer the conversation. Now, to that end, before we go over today's market performance and run down those show topics, let's tackle this caller question now.
Hey, Justin, Luke, I just wanted to get your input on CCJ, the uranium holding company. Yeah, just let me know your thoughts.
CCJ is Cameco Corporation. Cameco engages in the provision of uranium, uranium mining, milling, conversion, and fuel services for the nuclear power industry. It has significant high-grade reserves and has done a good job of making low-cost operations. It also has pretty broad exposure to the nuclear fuel cycle with stakes in various companies, including most recently Westinghouse Electric. Now, over the past couple months, it's been doing really well. Year-to-date up 61.06%, up 42.90% over the past 52 weeks. And the reason why is, well, the uranium market broadly has had a pretty large tailwind. The narrative about nuclear energy growth and supply constraints in uranium and really demand for clean baseload energy has boosted companies like Cameco. They have long-term supply agreements with various companies and countries that run in the length of decades. And so that strengthens their position, not just in the U.S., but internationally. About 80% of their revenue comes from Canada, about 20% comes from the United States, but they're growing their business out of Europe. Now, there have been some production challenges, but in spite of that, you've seen consistent analyst upgrades, upgrades in sentiment. And that's because Cameco is really an essential feedstock play in the nuclear cycle. That being said, right, it's not all green. Nuclear power tends to be cyclical. They're exposed to commodity price swings in uranium and mining. They have regulatory risk. They have operational execution risk. But these long-term contracts help to mitigate those things. Now, looking at its valuation, it's trading at about 62 times forward-looking price to earnings, 7.6 times price to book value, 47.2 times price to cash flow. That's really because it's had a significant run-up here in spite of it being down about 3.64% today. Its revenue growing 10% on an annualized basis, net income growing 17.6%, margins expanding up from 5.5% net margin to 20.3%, EBITDA margin at 54.5%. You know, we've held this name in a couple of our strategies for a while because we believe in the tailwinds that have been growing the uranium industry. Now, if I was thinking to make a new position, I'd probably be a bit hesitant here because of the valuation. But the reason why we haven't really sold out of it, we have been trimming and taking profits, is because from a momentum perspective, it is so very strong. We like Cameco. We will continue to hold Cameco. That is Cameco Corporation, ticker CCJ. Got a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we have planned for you all today. My main focus point concerns this topic, when and how to change financial advisors. We'll have a discussion, more of a comprehensive guide for investors so you can assess the performance of your current advisor, including communication skills and fee structure. We'll outline the necessary steps for a smooth and compliant transition to a new management professional, should it be necessary. Also, a couple more interesting stories. One, another guide, so to speak, of how you might want to position your portfolio to protect against an AI bust. A little bit of a discussion on consumer earnings that we've seen this week and what that makes clear about the wealth effect and who really is powering consumer spending. And gold retreating today after record rally, on track for its biggest daily drop in 5 years. So should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch on that. We also have some voicemail calls ready to play, including one on American Financial Group, ticker AFG, and another on Meta Platforms, ticker META, as well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. Moving into our break, our first break. It's very likely that you probably be making several important investment decisions here in the fourth quarter. But before you do so, I recommend that you look at our new comprehensive 2025 Q4 Economic and Market Outlook Report. It's a free read, and it's posted now at investtalk.com. My phone lines are open, waiting for you at 888-99-CHART.
The prosperous future you envision for yourself and your family will not happen without strategic planning and definitive action.
Let's go to Brian in San Mateo looking at Roku.
And I wanted your take on the technical picture.
For the unprepared investor, market volatility around the world demonstrates risk, but opportunities wait for no one. And now may be the best time in years to invest wisely, to invest strategically.
What I would do is keep saving and look for other opportunities.
But how can you decide what sectors to avoid, which stocks to buy, and what might be the best price point?
I'm new to investing, and my friend Wesley recommended your podcast a year ago.
The next decisive step on your path to financial freedom begins with a Spotify search for InvestTalk. Listen live or download the free podcast.
Luke Guerrero is here, and he's ready with answers to your finance and investment questions. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk a little bit about the market today. U.S. stocks mixed overall, pretty choppy trading for this Tuesday. Ended a bit off of their best levels, though the Dow did cap off a fresh record close on the day. Dow was up 47, S&P 500. Flat on the day, NASDAQ down 16 basis points, Russell 2000 down 49. Outperformers included A and D names, electricals and multis, life sciences, apparel and home builders. Big tech, pretty mixed. Amazon, the notable gainer on the day, with Google, the notable underperformer from that group. Other underperformers included metal miners, industrial metals, semis, and tobacco. Treasuries, mostly firmer. You did see some flattening on the curve. Yields down about 3 basis points on that longer end. At the same time, dollar index was up 40 basis points. Gold finished down 5.7% after another record-setting Monday, logging its worst single session since June 2013. Silver settled down 7.2% after its own recent run. Stocks didn't really move much, right? Choppy trading despite a number of moving pieces that were in play. Overall, I would say earnings takeaways thus far have been fairly positive. Beat rates are still pretty elevated. Sell side commentary is still talking about positive execution. And you're seeing some traction behind these growth and productivity initiatives that continues to float valuations. You also have a bit of a validation of the resilient consumer wealth effect narrative all throughout different companies' earnings. You also did see some bad, right? You had Zion US fit with the recent pushback against, or rather some additional good within the financial sector. You saw Zion US fitting with the recent pushback against last week's flare-up in credit underwriting concerns that really drove a big sell-off in regional banks and other financial names. And you saw gold sell-off. It put some scrutiny on this debasement trade, but could be just more of a function of technical and positioning. And then, from a corporate perspective, right across the board, you're still seeing M&A activity. That's remaining a tailwind from Wall Street. Nothing really new on the trade front, though. Trump did note by making an offhand comment that a meeting with China's Xi may not, in fact, happen. On the data side, Philly Fed non-manufacturing index for October slid to the lowest level since June, with new orders and employment both declining. Nothing on track for Wednesday, though Thursday will bring the September existing home sales and some state-level data for initial claims. Recall that as the government is closed, we're not getting federal jobs data. And so what happens is Wall Street comes and they use the state-level data to try and come up with a nationwide estimate. The highlight on Friday will be the delayed release of the September CPI report. Street looking for the headline CPI up 40 basis points month over month and a 3.1% year over year change, while core seen at 30 basis points month over month and 3.1% year over year. Flash PMIs for October, final University of Michigan sentiment for October and September, as well as new home sales also on the calendar. Big reminder, no Fed speak this week ahead of the 29th of October FOMC decision. The market will be pricing in, still is pricing in, about 50 basis points of additional cuts this year. Let's keep things moving. We're going to go with a YouTube question. And as you know, not only do we have a podcast, an Instagram channel, Instagram page, whatever you want to call it, we have a YouTube channel. It's Invest Talk with two T's. And while you're over there, if you want to leave a question, feel free. And even if it's addressed to Justin, maybe I'll answer it. Like this one that says, thanks, Justin. Are you guys still holding MDT? What are your thoughts on medical devices in general? Well, MDT is a name that we still hold in a couple strategies. That is Medtronic PLC. Medtronic develops, manufactures, and sells device-based medical therapies worldwide. So from heart rhythm disorders to diabetes to spinal issues, neurological issues. It's a big company. It's got about 95,000 employees, including one of my friends, across well over 150 countries. And, you know, the company has been doing a pretty solid job in the growth of its business in the past couple years, right? Revenue up from $32 billion in April 2024 to about $35 billion this year. And while that happened, net income nearly doubling in that time period. So really a rough 2020 through 2023, but the past couple years really picked up for this company. Margins expanded back to about 20.2%. Now they are announcing, or rather they did announce, that its diabetes unit will become a standalone company named MiniMed. And what that is trying to do, right, is to unlock value and allow both parent companies of these, the new diabetes entity, to focus more clearly on their respective markets. We like that often with companies that have too many hands in the fire, right? Too many cooks in the kitchen, too much going on. You specialize and you scale better. They also had some pretty strong regulatory wins with new product launches. And overall cash flow has just improved. Free cash flow is sitting at $5.6 billion right now. And it's still trading at 16.4 times forward-looking earnings. Well, that's below its high of 23.5 and just around its average. Now, we like medical devices broadly. We think that medical devices are one of the best areas of the healthcare space. And so for us, especially one that has a bit of a solid balance sheet, right? Long-term debt, about $26 billion on a market cap of $124 billion, net cash flow headed in the right direction. All of these things signal a company that for us, we're going to continue to hold on to. So that is Medtronic PLC, ticker MDT. Thanks for the call. And thanks for watching. Moving into break, still to come, my main focus point and more answers to your questions. I encourage you to call now at 888-99-CHART.
Have you heard about InvestTalk Innovators? It's available now free on the InvestTalk YouTube channel. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero interview company leaders, founders, and visionaries. So head over to the InvestTalk YouTube channel and look for InvestTalk Innovators.
Our main focus point today is a pretty important one. And that's about when and how to change financial advisors. Now, your financial advisor should be more of a partner in helping you achieve your goals. And if they're not, well, it might be time for somebody new. The most common reasons people switch advisors are poor communication, weak performance, and high fees. Now, that's confirmed by a Morningstar study that was done in 2023, but I mean that makes common sense. Before making a move, though, if something can be fixed, maybe you're on the wrong page with them, well, consider giving feedback first, right? Sometimes miscommunication is the real issue, and a reset conversation can fix it. Still, there are clear red flags. Infrequent contact, generic advice, or being passed off to a call center instead of actually having a dedicated advisor. If your advisor doesn't tailor your strategies, your financial plan to your goals, like if you're a high net worth individual and you need tax efficient investing, or if you are somebody who has a complicated financial situation that needs more in-depth retirement planning, well, then it's worth exploring other options. You want to evaluate your relationship with simple questions. Do they meet with you regularly as you demand? For us, we let our clients set the pace. There are some people who only want to talk to us once a year. Some people want to talk more frequently. You should be the one setting the time period here. Do they act in your best interest? Do they charge a fair fee? Obviously, as I mentioned, this could be a miscommunication. You should probably give your advisor a couple months, 6 months to improve communication if you have that conversation, or some time to adjust investment results before deciding to move on. But if you're ready for a change, referrals can be great. Ask friends, ask colleagues for who they use. What is their satisfaction with their own advisors? And when you start to narrow that list down, think of it as what it is. It's a job interview. Interview at least three candidates. Ask how they'll handle your account personally, how your relationship will work, how often you will communicate. Once you choose that advisor, you're going to want to review that contract for termination terms, for exit fees. Make sure that what is being said to you verbally matches what is being handed to you in writing. Now, your new advisor, and we do this for our clients all the time, will guide the asset transfer process, usually through what's called ACATS or Automated Customer Account Transfer Services. And it takes about a week. Anytime you move on, anytime you're thinking about moving on, frankly, anytime at all, it's critical to keep copies of all records, confirm any implications of the moves of assets you are making, and remember, this is a relationship that should be a partnership. And if it strays from that, you have the right to switch. Be polite, be decisive, but if your needs aren't being met, move on. Let's pivot back to the InvestTalk voice bank for a question that came in earlier.
Hello, InvestTalks. Today I'm calling about American Financial Group, ticker symbol AFG. As always, I monitor for profitability, debt levels, and cash flow before I continue looking into these companies. And I really like this company's. I don't have any insurance companies and would like some exposure. What's your opinion of this business? Thank you, and I'll be listening on the podcast.
American Financial Group, ticker AFG, is an insurance holding company, headquartered in Ohio. And, you know, what the company does with its core businesses is primarily specialty commercial P&C insurance. So property and transportation, damage liability for buses, trucks, inland and ocean transportation, agricultural transportation. They also do excess and surplus liability, so think your umbrella policies. They also do trade credit insurance. Now, what the company tries to do, or has seemed to do because of how much they return to shareholders, as they have bought back shares pretty consistently over the past 5 years and have a solid dividend, is continue to grow that dividend, sitting about 2.7% right now. But as I mentioned, right, total return here from shares being bought back, shares are down from about 87.5 million shares outstanding to about 83.5 million shares outstanding. They also, from time to time, do declare these special dividends, trying to get money back into the hands of shareholders. Now, net operating earnings did drop a bit to about $1.81 per share in Q1 of 2025 versus $2.76 in Q1 of 2024. But, you know, that is something that could be cyclical. You did have losses, increased volatility within the industry. But I think one thing that I like here is it trades at a pretty modest valuation here, 11.7 times price to forward-looking earnings, return on equity about 16.6 times, pretty high relative to its peers, with the exception of maybe a couple names, certainly in the upper 70% there. Solid net interest earned growth, solid net income growth. I would say if you're focused on dividends, you're focused on income, this is a pretty solid insurance name to hold. Balance sheet looks good. Overall, not much bad here. That is American Financial Group, ticker AFG. As we move into a break, let me tell you about a new series, Invest Talk Innovators. Justin Klein just interviewed Anthony Katz, the visionary founder of Hyperice, and they talked all about AI and transforming the wellness industry. Check it out at our Invest Talk YouTube.
...2025 rolls on, and you've got finance and investment questions for Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. Call InvestTalk 8.
Claude is the AI for minds that don't stop at good enough. It's the collaborator that actually understands your entire workflow and thinks with you, not for you. Let me tell you how we use Claude. We use Claude to build widgets on our website and to build a data dashboard using data from various information sources. Claude doesn't just give us answers. It helps us think through the problem. For example, Claude found connections across 50 plus sources that we never would have spotted ourselves. With Claude AI, you can connect to your work tools and data, create custom workflows, and benefit from extended thinking mode that maintains context and understanding throughout extensive conversations. Claude is for everyone, financial services, education, AI agents, and coders. Ready to tackle bigger problems? Sign up for Claude today and get 50% off Claude Pro when you use my link, claude.ai/invest. That's claude.ai/invest right now for 50% off your first 3 months of Claude Pro. That includes access to all the features mentioned in today's episode. Claude.ai/invest.
88.99 chart.
Hey, Justin, Luke, it's Andrew from Atlanta. I wanted to ask a question about Meta. Do you think it would be something that maybe I should take a position in looking forward? And if so, what's the entry price? Another thing, I was talking to my sister. She was feeling real good about her holdings, and I was telling her, you know, when you're feeling real good, that's probably when you need to trim. And then when you're feeling real bad about something, that's probably when you need to buy if the fundamentals are there. But, you know, I can't get her to listen to me. If you could comment on there, we'll see if she'll listen to you. Sure hope you guys have a great day. Thanks, buddy. Bye.
Stickler at Meta first. Meta, formerly known as Facebook, very large company, $1.9 trillion, primarily operating through two different segments, right? Their family of apps, which is their social media platforms, their advertising business, and their reality lab. So that's your hardware, VR, AR, metaverse infrastructure. Now, they have heavily invested in AI, right? They've built up large data centers, these superclusters to support all of these advanced neural networks. But that's not where the money is. The money is still their social media and advertising business. That is its core cash machine. And so what they're trying to do by spending billions and billions and billions, and I could say it multiple times, of dollars, is try and diversify that revenue stream. Now, Meta plans to spend about $600 billion through 2030 on AI infrastructure. They just signed a $27 billion financing deal, I think today, for their new data center campus in Louisiana. They have AI partnerships, they have chip strategies, they have new hardware that they're trying to push, right? Their new smart glasses with the display, more expensive version of the Ray-Ban Meta glasses. And again, this is all to say they're trying to diversify here. And they're really at the nexus of these two growth trends: advertising, digital advertising, social platforms, and artificial intelligence. But their business model requires a lot of money. And the new growth channels are still early stage, which adds a lot of execution risk, adds a lot of margin pressures. And so the question is, with all of these things, is this the proper way to get exposure here? Now, they're trading at 24.6 times price to forward-looking earnings, not as egregious as they have been, certainly near their average price book, about 9.4 times. Again, from a valuation perspective, pretty middle of the road compared to where they have been. Year-to-date, they're up 25.24%, past 52 weeks up 27.49%. Slightly underperforming their industry right now, but revenue growth has started to taper off and margins are still pretty stable there. Net margins sitting at about 37% rather. My feeling about Meta is I like other plays within this space that aren't burning as much cash in hopes that something comes of it. And so I think the risk to investing in Meta, although it has had a great year, given where it is, outweighs some of the potential benefits. So for now, I would hang on here. I would hang on here because at a certain point, the market is going to demand some results for all of the capital that it's spending. Now, to your second point, sell when you're happy about things, buy when you're not. I think that is a good rule broadly when you're talking about the market in general. I wouldn't advise anybody to buy a stock that they feel really bad about. But I think that sentiment definitely is a good idea when you think about the market broadly, right? When things start to, when there's blood in the streets, that's when you buy. When everybody's greedy, that's when you're going to want to take some profit. That is META, Meta Platforms. All right, what are we going to talk about next? Oh, perfect. This is actually a pretty good segue because what we've seen recently is a bit of a return to volatility, and in some ways, it's starting to shake some confidence in the market's most crowded trade, the AI stock boom, which has really fueled record highs this year. Mega-cap tech and chip names drove the 2025 rally, but concerns over massive new AI infrastructure spending, like Meta's doing, have investors questioning whether valuations have outrun fundamentals. Many are now hedging against a potential AI pullback, rotating into sectors and strategies that could hold up if sentiment turns. Now, equal weighted ETFs, that's certainly one option. They reduce the dominance of AI heavyweights that now make up roughly 44% of the S&P 500's market value. And that's because an equal weight index, by definition, overweights, relative to market cap weighted, overweights smaller names. Funds like the iShares S&P 500 Equal Weight or Invesco's version, they're going to give you every stock in the S&P 500, but they're going to give it to you at an equal weight. Both of those up about 8% this year versus the S&P's 15, right? Because what we've been seeing recently is breadth being an issue in this market. And there are other defensive plays. People tend to go towards healthcare stocks, which are historically resilient in downturns and supported by steady cash flows and dividends. You're seeing some healthcare stocks perform well, some insurance names performing well. And healthcare's valuations look pretty tame, 17 times forward-looking earnings versus 21 times for tech, giving a bit of a relative value cushion. That's what you want to look for here if you're trying to diversify and hedge. Where are there cushions in terms of relative valuation? And maybe you want to look outside the U.S. International markets have drawn inflows as investors diversify from U.S. AI risk, ex-U.S. equity funds. So I record $50 billion in inflows in the 3 months ending September. Several foreign benchmarks are outperforming their U.S. counterparts, especially on a dollar-adjusted basis. And so some managers are also saying, okay, well, we don't want to get out of tech, but we want to rotate somewhere else. And so you're starting to see a rotation into software companies, specifically ones with subscription-based revenues and steadier earnings. Another reason, gold has been doing well. Gold has emerged as the standout alternative in terms of assets over the past 18 months. Now, we did see a bit of reversal today, but again, how much of that is due to market structure, technicals, versus how much are people actually thinking the market is overvalued and gold may be a good place to go? Either way, what I have laid out for you are not the only options you have for trying to protect your portfolio against an AI pullback, but the best time to start to protect it is today. Let's drop in another question from 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Justin. This is Chris from New York. Just want to get your thoughts on the company Vail. Ticker is V-A-L-E. I have a 2% position right now. Just want to get your thoughts on the company and if I should be adding more. I'll probably wait for it to level off a little bit. But just want to get your thoughts, and I look forward to hearing your answer on the podcast. Thank you. Bye.
Ticker V-A-L-E is an ADR of a Brazilian miner. Now, Vail's core business looks like iron ore, pellets, nickel, copper, manganese ore, along with logistics to support its heavy mining operations. Now, the company has two pretty broad segments, right? They're iron solutions and energy transition materials, making up both of those. And so, you know, that is to say they have a lot of exposure both to traditional iron ore, steel making and transition metals, as well as clean energy and electric vehicles. And that's a $48 billion market cap company, done pretty well year to date, up 27.06% year to date, up 11.25% in the past 3 months. And a lot of that is headwind, or rather tailwinds, from the demand for their products, the demand for steel in a traditional sense, the demand for steel for green energy transition. But that's not to say that the company isn't cyclical, right? Its fortunes are tied to the commodity cycle, to iron ore prices, to global steel demand, to nickel copper demand for EVs. And so with it up this much, let's look at the fundamentals. Well, they've only grown at about 30 basis points on an annualized basis over the past 5 years. Revenue's actually fallen from December 2022, $43 billion, to about $37 net income. Kind of all over the place, again, based upon those commodities. Margins, also all over the place. I would say the only shining part of this is it's trading at a reasonable valuation. But I think, given the regulatory risk of mining broadly in general, and given the concentration of this company and its jurisdiction, given that 48.9% of its revenue comes directly from China, I think the risks of this company are a little bit higher than some of your other metal companies. That is V-A-L-E, Vail S-A. This is InvestTalk, and we got plenty of time to play two in a row.
I have a question about company Teleflex Incorporated, TFX. Just wondering what you guys think of the company and what a good entry point is. Thank you for your help. Take care.
TFX is the company. And the name of the company is Teleflex. Teleflex Incorporated. It is a medical technological products company. So it has a couple business segments. It operates through its business segments broken down geographically. 68% of its revenue comes from the Americas. 20% comes from Europe. and about 12% comes from Asia. That's about a small to mid-cap company, $5.7 billion, so on the smaller mid-cap range. Revenue grew at about 3.3% on an annualized basis, going back the past 5 years. Really not crazy growth there. Same time, net income has fallen, it looks like, from 2019 to 2024, falling from $462 million to about $70 million, albeit it's supposed to grow again pretty significantly to about $630 million right here, or rather this year. From a relative valuation perspective, it's trading pretty cheap, about 8.8 times price to forward-looking earnings, 1.4 times price to book value, all at the lower end of its range. But it's down pretty heavily, 25.24% is what it's down year-to-date, 43.72% over the past 52 weeks, while being up 21.2% over the past 3 months. There's a lot of volatility here. I think that's probably one of the reasons why it has a consensus hold rating compared to, well, a bunch of other names. Now, they've had some acquisitions on the books that they're trying to work with. They have expansion plans all across the United States, opening up new facilities, trying to meet the rising global demand in cardiological, neurological, and radiological applications. But its portfolio is not that broad, right? They have exposure to very similar segments. Growth looks modest, if not anemic. Net income, again, although there's supposed to be a big boost into this year, doesn't look too great. And so I did say, you know, I like a lot of med tech companies, but momentum looks pretty poor here. Technicals look poor and growth doesn't look great. So for now, I would keep this on my watch list. Certainly wouldn't buy into it. That is Teleflex, ticker TFX. All right, let's talk a little bit about spending, because earnings season is off to a pretty strong start. 87% of the S&P 500 have reported beating profits per LSEG data. We got results from Coca-Cola, 3M, GM, Philip Morris. They've highlighted really one key theme. U.S. consumers are pretty resilient, but the strength is uneven. Affluent households are by far and away driving spending. Lower income consumers are continuing to feel the squeeze from not just inflation, but higher borrowing costs. Coca-Cola saw margin expansion, but warned that lower income shoppers are under a bit of pressure, right? There are two distinct consumer groups here. 3M raised its profit outlook, but noted weakness in consumer and housing demand. So sales of everyday goods like roofing granules were soft. General Motors, well, they beat expectations. They lifted their full year forecast after cutting its estimated tariff hit. But they're warning that the lower creditworthy segments aren't really coming to buy cars. They also struck a realistic tone on EVs. They projected slower electric vehicle sales, but stronger 2026 performance overall. And U.S. auto sales climbed 6% in Q3. Average new car prices topping $50,000 for the first time as buyers gravitated towards these premium models. All signals of where the money is coming from with respect to spending. This consumption gap is fueling a two-speed economy. Strong equity markets benefit the wealthy, whose portfolios then amplify spending power, while those who don't own assets are being punished even more with inflation. As long as these affluent earners keep spending, right, growth is left afloat. Overseas, other companies as well, showing the same thing. Adidas noting lower-end consumers struggling. Now, the market struck an upbeat tone, but investors have to handicap what is going on here when various parts of the economy have differing experiences. This is InvestTalk. I'm Luke Greer. We have one goal here to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after this break, so get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, this is Mike from Detroit. I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. So I have a position that I started over a year ago. Thankfully, I picked it up and it was a lot lower and I'm up. But with this pullback, I was looking to add some shares. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position? Thank you.
Apple, I think, needs no introduction. One of the largest companies on planet Earth. Chances are, if you're listening to this, you are listening to it on an iPhone. And that's because the ubiquity of Apple's ecosystem is truly unmatched. Now, year to date, they're only up about 4.93%, only up about 23.67% in the past 3 months, only about 11.12% in the past 52 weeks. And so in a way, they're underperforming a lot of those bigger names that are more heavily exposed to the AI space. And Apple really is not. They have not done a huge amount of investment like some of these other companies have. Siri is, frankly, not great. Compared to, it actually just went off on my desk when I said its name, so maybe it's angry. But compared to a lot of what it's doing, what a lot of these other tech companies are doing, that's one of the reasons why the company hasn't fared too well. Now, their most recent earnings suggested that, well, the iPhone 17 is doing a pretty darn good job of selling, not just in the US, but externally as well. That's why the company is up a bit over the past 3 months, up 23.67%. It is a name we hold, albeit at a lower weight than we held it last year, but we still hold it in one of our strategies. And that's because we think that it is a name that has a ridiculous amount of cash on its balance sheet, $65.2 billion in cash and short-term investments on its balance sheet. It has free cash flow of $110 billion. It has revenue of $416 billion, net income, $110 billion. Its margins are crazy. It has such power, and it has the cash to, if it wants to, buy an AI play. And so we're going to continue to hold on to Apple. Given its run-up, I'm not so sure that I would be adding on here. So if you're up a lot, I would certainly start to trim, take a little bit of profit. But either way, I think it's a pretty solid company that is AAPL, Apple. Now, we mentioned it, gold plunged 5.5% today, its sharpest daily drop since August of 2020. As investors took some profits, right, falling a record high above $3,300 an ounce. And the fall snapped a meteoric 60% year-to-date rally, fueled by geopolitical tensions, rate cut bets, and sustained central bank accumulation. Traders said volatility at record highs signaled a bit of exhaustion. You saw a short-term profit taking, triggering this pullback. And gold dips were really being bought all the way up until yesterday. But the latest volatility has flashed a bit of caution. The US dollar rose about 40 basis points, making gold more expensive for non-dollar buyers and further pressuring prices. And the broader risk on sentiment markets also has been weighing pretty heavily on this safe haven trade as equities rebounded from recent volatility. Now, Citi and some other analysts expect near-term consolidation. They say progress on a US-China trade deal and resolution of the government shutdown could steady gold prices. Silver plunged even more, 7.6% today, while platinum fell 5.9% and palladium dropped 5.3%. So you're seeing this broader retreat across precious metals. Markets are still expecting, though, the Fed to cut rates by 25 basis points next week, a backdrop that should keep medium-term support under gold despite the near-term shakeout. And so what you're seeing today, as I mentioned at the top of the show, could just be a result of market structure, could just be that this historic run-up needed a little bit of room to breathe, a little bit of a pullback. But the conditions, at least for now, that existed, that have driven gold higher, are likely to continue moving forward. Geopolitical tensions, macroeconomic issues, flight to safety, gold continues to be that trade. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another InvestTalk program. Justin and I thank you for joining and encourage you to tell at least one friend, one family member about our free podcast downloads. You can get yours anytime at iTunes and Spotify. And while you're over there, please be sure to leave us a rate and review. Also, if today's show made you think about your financial picture, your investments, your taxes, your retirement, and whether it's all really working together. At KPP Financial, we offer no-cost portfolio reviews. We try to help bring a little bit of clarity and confidence to your investing lives. That sounds interesting. Justin and I would love to speak with you. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.